Okay, welcome to this episode of Silicon Sandbox. I'm Steve Chung, Chief Digital Officer at Fox TV Stations. I'm incredibly excited to welcome today's guest. And just to, before we get it to Fred, I wanted to kind of remind our audiences about the podcast. Silicon Sandbox really features the movers and shakers in the innovative and entrepreneurial spaces in Los Angeles. We're incredibly honored to welcome today's guest, whose name is Fred Farina. Fred, hopefully I'm saying your last name correctly.
That's correct.
Okay. And Fred is Caltech's Chief Innovation and Corporate Partnerships Officer. We're going to get to know Fred and about Caltech, which I'm sure all of you know or should know. We're really excited to get into it. So Fred, why don't we kick off? The question that's on all of our minds is, how important was the Big Bang Theory to Caltech? Maybe we can start with that. That was such a culturally relevant and interesting series that was long lasting and it really centered around Caltech.
Well, I think it was important to the world of science and engineering in general, research. You know, it gave people an overview of what it is and the culture in it. Granted, it's a sitcom comedy show and, it's somewhat disconnected from the reality, but there were some elements that were very true. But as far as Caltech, I don't think it made much of a difference. We keep going on our own pace and, okay, and trying to push the boundaries of science and engineering and knowledge. So probably not directly on Caltech. I think in the world of science, it would be very helpful to get people to understand what it's about.
I love the show myself. Actually, just curious, was there any involvement with Caltech during the production at all in any way, or how did the whole interaction happen?
There were some episodes that were shot on campus.
Yeah.
There was one with Stephen Hawking, for example.
Yeah.
But there was, as far as I know, there was no direct involvement in the production or anything like that. So.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I think it was great. The second thing, personally, actually, I want to thank you because, and I hate to give away my little secret in fear that it will attract undue attention, but I have two daughters. The first is a little over two, and I am actually a regular visitor to your campus. I want to say thank you. During the pandemic, Caltech is one of our go-to places where my daughter can run around. And obviously during the pandemic, there isn't a lot of people around, but you have like a pond with a lot of turtles, which is her favorite. Mm-hmm. And I meet so many other parents of young children who's using Caltech as just an amazing environment for kids to just sort of hang out during the pandemic. So I want to say thank you. I don't know if you've been on campus recently, but I'm sure you see your share of parents with children running around.
Yes, always, even before the pandemic. It's a beautiful campus, a beautiful environment to bring the kids and, you know, even talk about the things that go on in this place. So it's part of our culture. You know, it's an open campus to welcome the residents, people around to come through and soak up the energy at Caltech.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you for the turtles. And sometimes you have very aggressive squirrels. So we need to keep an eye out on that.
Turtles can be aggressive too.
Exactly. Yeah, okay. All right. Well, let's get into it. Let's first talk about Caltech. What in some ways a mysterious institution. I for full disclosure, I grew up in Southern California. I went to Arcadia High School, so not far from Caltech. Maybe some of your peers like MIT have a little bit more of a, because it's maybe bigger and perhaps I think it was established earlier, but, I think maybe there's more exposure about MIT, but for Caltech, it's always seemed to me a very exclusive sort of almost secretive, where like the incredibly smart geniuses go. But maybe you can tell our listeners and viewers a little about Caltech. I mean, you know, and I have a bunch of questions, so you don't have to go to the whole story, but you know, what's really Caltech all about in a paragraph?
So Caltech is all about pushing the boundaries of knowledge in science, engineering, and all kinds of areas, and taking on the most challenging problems in science and the natural world in a way that's very collegial, that enables people, the researchers, the scientists, to be free to explore many areas, to pursue curiosity-driven research that oftentimes leads to, you know, the understanding of nature at the more fundamental level, which needs to new discoveries and inventions that can solve many problems. And interestingly, because we are the California Institute of Technology, as you try to investigate these very deep challenges in nature, you have to develop instrumentation that can see, measure, quantify things, and how you as you do that, this instrumentation opens up all kinds of other potential applications in real life, whether in medicine or other areas that are beneficial to real life. So it's small. We are understated. The culture is very based on substance, and that's why we have been historically not very out there in terms of telling the world what we do, our story. I think that is changing in LA, for example, in terms of the name, but that's changing, and we're making efforts to connect to the community. And also, part of my job, what I do, is to maximize the impact of the research in real life through commercialization, startups, inventions that make it to people's lives. And that also helps tell the story of why the research we do is so important, because of the impact it has in everyday life.
Yeah, got it. So, I mean, obviously there's a lot there, but would you say Caltech versus some of the other technology-oriented universities focus more on kind of the fundamental research, maybe not as much application, or is that a fair statement or not really?
No, that's a very fair statement. We're really trying to get to the bottom of why things work the way they are working, and understanding at the very fundamental level. That's a large part of what Caltech does. Not to say that there's areas where that are a bit more applied, but it's still based on, when you connect the two, you sort of get the best of both worlds, because unlocking some really interesting knowledge can lead to applications that then we also can work on. So we have both sides, but at the end of it, fundamentally, Caltech is about fundamental science.
Gotcha. And, you know, obviously a lot of our listeners, they're more sort of digital oriented, if you will, which I don't know if it makes the definition of fundamental science from Caltech, but let's say, Caltech on the tech side, I guess, is there a specific area that Caltech focuses on? You know, walking around campus, I see, you know, mechanical engineering. I think I see, you know, neuroscience. I see a bunch of other things, but those are just buildings that I walk by. But are there a couple of core areas where Caltech sort of defines itself as technology, or what? I'm sure maybe that's evolved. What are you guys working on these days as a core?
I think part of the sort of secret sauce is that we handpick faculty members, researchers who come work at Caltech. There's only 300 of them, professorial faculty members, and they're given a lot of freedom to explore areas. So they define the areas they go into. At the same time, we have centers that have a focus in one area. You know, for example, we have the Resnick Institute for Sustainability, and so that's all about sustainability, ecology, water resources, and carbon capture and all that. And we have a new center for translational research and science and medicine. And I would say that what's really, and it's just, I could name many other areas. Obviously, we have, you know, CAST, the Center for Autonomous Systems and Technology, drones and autonomous vehicles. And you can go down the list. But what is remarkable and unique about Caltech, and maybe because of its size, but also because of the culture, is that it's very multidisciplinary. You know, the concept of bringing all disciplines together that became sort of fashionable and in the last 15, 20 years, that's been part of our DNA since the very beginning. And this is, the reason is the way we hire faculty members. We don't build huge groups in one area. We really have faculty members in different areas. And even across disciplines, from say, physics, math, astronomy, which is one division, to biology and engineering. And people talk, it's a small campus, they get to know each other. And so it's very porous in terms of the exchanges between all these people, division departments. There's no, you know, like, and the campus is contiguous. People bump into each other randomly all the time on campus. We have the great place that probably walk by all the time, the Athenaeum.
Yeah.
Where people have lunch and see each other.
That multidisciplinary fusion. You know, I did my MBA at Stanford, and I know they're also big on that. So I'm a huge believer there. And I think that is the world we're in. So excited to hear about that rich history. So, you know, I think for to kind of the masses here on Caltech, can you point to some things that they may have heard about, you know, other than Big Bang Theory, of course, that sort of came out of Caltech or can associate, you know, in sort of a real world example of some of the, you know, things that Caltech was instrumental in contributing to?
Yeah. So as you know, we also run the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. It's a NASA lab that's managed by Caltech for NASA and right. All the unmanned space missions. Most of them are out of JPL. So all the Mars things, you know, people would relate to that. In terms of technologies that touches people, the automated DNA sequencing machine, the sequencer, was initially designed and invented at Caltech in the 80s.
Oh, wow.
So that enabled the Human Genome Project and really modern medicine, precision medicine, where you can actually design a therapy based on people's genes. Mm-hmm. Then there was the pH meter was also invented at Caltech.
Is that the pH level of, what is the pH meter?
The instrument that measures the pH of a solution.
The acid and the base pH?
Right.
Or is that, oh, pH. Wow, look at that. Okay.
Base. Very good.
Man, I'm digging deep back into AP biology from high school. Okay.
Yeah. So that instrument was invented at Caltech. You know, some early work on the microwave that ended up in the microwave ovens. I could go down a long list of things. Did I mention the CMOS image sensor as well? The chip that goes into your phone.
Yeah.
Or for digital imaging. That was designed, and the underlying technology was developed for the space program, a mission to Saturn.
Okay.
And they needed to miniaturize and put the imager on the chip and make it cheaper and low power consumption. And the reason we're able to put them on phones now is because of those characteristics.
Yeah. Okay. So when I go and microwave something after this interview, I have to thank Caltech. And when I answer the phone, it's got something to do with what you guys have built, actually.
When you take pictures.
All right. Okay. Very good. Okay. And you mentioned JPL because I was always curious because I knew there was some involvement there, but what exactly is Caltech's relationship with NASA? Like, what does that mean actually? Do you build a
consider JPL as one of the divisions of Caltech. The employees, the people there are Caltech employees.
Got it.
But there's a contract between NASA and Caltech for us to manage the lab. So the funding primarily comes from NASA under a contract. And the facility is owned by NASA and the people are Caltech employees.
Got it. And forgive my ignorance, because it's been a while since I've been in Southern California, but JPL's mission is to be building spacecraft, or what is JPL's goal?
It's basically unmanned space exploration.
Got it.
So all the missions that went to Saturn and Jupiter and Mars and that have robotic spacecraft, that do science that carry instruments to monitor atmospheres and planets.
Got it. Okay, super cool. So, I mean, you're talking about, as I sort of put my commercial hat on, I mean, space, huge, investments and public companies and SPACs and Richard Branson and Jeff Bezos and, of course, Elon Musk and, that's a huge area that sounds like you guys have a lot in. You mentioned it earlier, but is there a more deliberate attempt from Caltech to become more application oriented as well? Or is that, I guess that's sort of part of your job and maybe we can get into that, but are those two things getting closer together from Caltech's mission, or what's your sort of view there?
Well, we are still about science and really understand, trying to understand the most difficult questions in human kind of existence and how the world works and the universe and life and biology and all that. So that's our main mission. And so, but what we've been doing in the past 15, 20 years is to add the component that takes that fundamental science to a place where it can be applied to everyday life. And that's what we've been building. And I'm sure we'll get into that a bit later, but the ecosystem around Caltech to help to really harness these research results into something that can be useful in everyday life. And not just as additional knowledge, which is very important too, right? And in terms of papers and pushing the boundaries, but also can be effectively used by people in everyday life and improve their lives.
Yeah. Well, okay. I mean, look, you have this title. I mean, just Caltech itself is like big, but you're the chief innovation officer. That's a big burden from Caltech's, brand. So let's talk a little bit about that ecosystem. So what you talked about building that, what does that exactly mean? Do you have, do you have incubators or do you have VCs or like, what does that sort of landscape look like for you?
Yeah. So fundamentally what needs to be understood and clarified, I think, and it's true at most universities, but particularly Caltech, because we're so fundamentally focused, is that, what comes out of the research is oftentimes, very interesting and breakthrough but very early stage. And at that stage, it's difficult to attract venture funding or the interest of a large company to come in and commercialize. A lot of has to be done to the state of that technology to bring it to a point where it's de-risked. People understand what applications they're going to, that the market is big enough, that it's cheap enough, that people are going to adopt it, that's better than the competition, all these questions.
Right.
And so that's what we do in my office and try to support that piece. 25 years ago, Caltech didn't have an office of technology transfer, so it was started then. I joined about 20 years ago. actually exactly 20 years ago.
Oh, wow.
In May will be 20 years.
Do they give you a 20-year ring or something or no?
Yeah, there's a ceremony that will.
Is that right? Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. All right.
And so in that time, we had to build to give you a point of reference, MIT started doing this in the 1940s.
Wow. Okay.
Stanford in 1970, they started, and we started in 1995. But we came in with a bang because within 5 years, we're on par with them in terms of inventions, patents, and even startups. Particularly if you look at per faculty member, you normalize that. So that happened, the culture changed. Faculty members, students were more interested in commercialization of their technology. And so that was great. But over time we realized there's some pieces that I'm missing. We cannot just be, the ecosystem around campus and around LA was not mature enough to really maximize the impact of our research. And so we thought we need to build some pieces to make the ecosystem more effective and at transferring these technologies. And so over time, we built many programs. So one of them that I mentioned is, it's a funding program. It's an internal funding program. It's the Rothenberg Innovation Initiative that was endowed by Jim Rothenberg, the former CEO of the Capital Group based in LA.
Yeah.
And a Pasadena resident and his family. And that's a funds that we can send to the labs to de-risk technology, to do prototyping, to do proof of concept, and take it those projects to the next level. So we have that funding that's internal to the lab. Then we realized what also we're missing is really people who, the human element of people who are experts at and very experienced at starting companies from scratch. So the first CEO of a company, the first CTO, who's done it before, who's been an entrepreneur 4 or 5 times, and they're operational, they know what to do, who to hire, the things to look after, they're connected to VCs and how to pitch to VCs. And so we need to bring that element. So we started 6 years ago now, a program called the Entrepreneur in Residence Program, where we bring in, we started with one person. The first one was Dave Licata, who's now the CEO of one of our very promising startups. He came in for 2 years and worked in our office and worked directly with faculty on starting companies and,
interesting.
And prepackaging. So that's been very critical, that expertise in that particular area, which is a little bit beyond what normally an office of tech transfer does, because we're focused on patenting and IP and licensing and also startups, but not at the operational level.
Right.
That was a key addition to our program. And now we're on year 6 or so. We have 2 of them, one in the physical science area and one in life science. And they've been on for 1.5 years and it's going very, very good, very well. So that's been a key program. And then we said, well, we have the internal funding and we have the EIRs, but then we need, it's still difficult for some technologies to get the first seed funding, the first $500,000, the first $1 million, because it's still early. They're still, they don't have a team together yet. Maybe they need to do some market research, product market fit analysis, all that. And so why don't we create a venture fund, a seed fund, and that Caltech will administer. And so through the pandemic, we've been talking about it for a long time, but most of the final design and work happened the last year with some trustees that have been very supportive and helpful. We designed this venture fund and then it was launched earlier this year. And now we have a seed fund in terms of Caltech that can see these companies at the level of $500,000 to $1 million, $1.5 million to launch them. And this time it's an investment in the company as opposed to a grant in the lab. So okay. It really takes you to the next level. And also we work with the Rothenberg family to establish an outside fund called Wilson Hill that works with us very closely. That basically sort of double the amount of money we can put in startups. They co-invest with us. And that's, again, with the Rothenberg family has been very instrumental in helping with that. And the final piece, well, two other pieces I want to mention is our the incubator space, right? So you think about innovation and the way we see it, that's... let me say something about deep tech. Like at Caltech, we deal with deep tech, right? It's yeah. always the technology is deep, and then we try to build a business on it. You think about three things that are required for startup ecosystem is the people that know how to deal with startups and the experts, yeah. the money to enable them to do it, and then the space to get into the environment where the startup is going to thrive, right?
Yeah, they need to operate.
Right. And so the space is somewhat less important. If I were to rank them, I think people and money is number one. Mm-hmm. Together, and then space, you can always find space. But specialized equipment is difficult sometimes to find. In life science, you know, you need sometimes vivariums and things like that. But now we are working on the third piece, since we put all these pieces together, our EIRs also, and my office are the people piece. Now we have the venture fund, and now we're looking at an incubator that will be hopefully, part of it will be open this year. And then we'll look at longer term for life science, a bit more, sophisticated space.
That's great. Fred, will you have a turtle pond inside that new office? you just have to go out and pick a few, I guess.
Yeah.
That's great. So by the way, I'm guessing all of this is basically limited to Caltech founded technologies, meaning that this venture fund wouldn't be interested. If any of our listeners had a cool idea or a company, you would not invest in an outside of Caltech venture. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's limited to Caltech-based technologies and maybe also alumni in some cases, but mostly it's not big enough to go outside Caltech.
Okay, gotcha. Makes sense.
And, yeah. I was going to say that, so the fourth piece is the ecosystem is the larger corporations are established and can be an anchor in the area. And so in the last couple of years, we've developed a collaborative relationship with AWS, Amazon Web Services. And we have two areas, machine learning, AI, and also quantum computing. And so they have space on campus, and they're actually constructing a new building for their quantum group that will be on campus as well. And so, you know, there will be a big presence of Amazon Web Services in Pasadena because Caltech has engaged them. And I would say we don't work with a lot of companies that are not like-minded. So we wanted companies that do fundamental research that really matches, they match with our culture in that respect. And that's important to us as well. So this is to say that we have been building the ecosystem, the piece by piece over time. And I feel like now we're really at the cusp of something big because, you know, we've been accumulating all these pieces and now they're ready to work together. Things are functioning very well. And so I've never been more excited about LA as a entrepreneurial hub and also Caltech, what we're doing here. And again, I've been in this job for 20 years. And frankly, I've never been more excited because of what is going on and where we are now. So,
yeah, no, that does sound very exciting. You know, as a former venture capitalist myself, as you talk about the people, money, and, you know, that I think there's something magical about Silicon Valley in all of those pieces coming together in one area. And this podcast is all about seeing if we can identify and highlight those pieces that come together for LA. So let's talk a little bit about that. I mean, you know, having grown up in Arcadia, I know, you know, exactly where Caltech is, Pasadena. You know, LA is a big, big place, right? And there's a lot of startups and, you know, media, entertainment, gaming out of West LA. And I guess maybe the Idea Lab in Pasadena is one example, though. You know, so you talked about some of the gaps you saw in the LA ecosystem and your ability to bolster that within Caltech. You know, talk to us about LA. You've been here, I guess you said 20 years or so. How has it changed? And, you know, is LA a good place to start a new tech, you know, or deep tech based company from your perspective? And what do you think about that?
Well, I think LA is probably the or one of the best places to do entrepreneurship now, because it's in a growth and booming phase, and the energy is really vibrant, and it's reaching the critical mass of people and capital and facilities that is really gelling now. And so I'm super excited about what's going on in LA these days. I've been, as you said, in this job for 20 years, but I was also a student at Caltech in the early 90s, so I've seen the things that were happening then. And I have to say, it's day and night from what it used to be. Now, and we're still having some, you know, have some challenges, but I would say, as you know, everybody knows, LA is a big place. It's a bit fragmented. And there's hubs around different areas. I think you can look at the three major universities, maybe some of the hospitals, where these hubs are, you know, Pasadena, Caltech, UCLA, the West Side, and, you know, near downtown area for USC. So that these are big engines of innovation that now are putting more resource into getting technologies out. So the challenge is, how do we connect these different hubs? And that's been a bit of a challenge. Now, there's new organizations that are doing a great job at that and are, you know, kind of reducing the size of LA by their presence, and the Alliance for Southern California Innovation is doing a fantastic job at putting the pieces together and connecting. I think that post-COVID, because of people's realization that you don't need to commute or go across town to have a great meeting, that will make it easier for the region. And we have such a rich history of innovation, whether it's aerospace or, you know, entertainment and even the life science. Some of the things I've done, been developed here in LA are really great. I think we don't do a good job enough at marketing ourselves or branding ourselves as a region. Maybe we're overshadowed by the entertainment industry, and that's the bit of the reputation of LA. And people are afraid of the megalopolis and, you know, this huge city with traffic and all that. So there's a bit of, and I think we need to do more actively brand and sell to the world our tech, biotech history and what is going on and the vibrancy. It's happening, and I think there's a lot of people from the Bay Area who decided to move down here because, you know, it's a new ground and for innovation and startups, and people are excited about that. And life is maybe, you know, I think life is better here than in Northern California.
Yeah.
In general, you know, not for everybody, unfortunately, but you can. Mm-hmm. And so our challenges right now are, I think I would say, the capital is coming. We have a few new venture funds like Westlake Ventures and Vida Ventures that are focused on LA, at least in part, and mm-hmm. Making a big difference. And that attracts people as well. And that's why we need to continue attracting the people who are these early stage entrepreneurs who know how to launch these companies.
So
people are coming. It's just I think we're getting close to the critical mass that will make us one of the major hubs of innovation.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. By the way, do you live near school, or I asked that question to our guests. So whereabouts do you live?
I live in Altadena.
Oh, okay. So very close.
Yeah.
A little bit north, I guess, north of Caltech?
A bit north of Caltech, like 8 minutes downhill is Caltech for me.
Okay. Very, very nice. Nothing like an 8 minute commute.
Yeah.
That's great. So, you know, I guess from where, you know, as I walk around, and maybe this is part of your, maybe a look to the future, I see a lot of new buildings popping up around campus.
Yeah.
Is there a deliberate attempt to invest into the Caltech campus, or, you know, where in the trajectory of Caltech are we in right now?
It's part of Caltech's growth, and it's really driven by the research, you know, and I should have mentioned one of the big impact. You know, Gordon Moore was a Caltech alum and founder of Intel. And also Carver Mead was a major, you know, he designed integrated circuits and the very large arrays, VLSI for circuits. So that was also a major contribution of Caltech to the computing in general, yeah. Having that. I'm reminded of Carver Mead because in one of his lectures, he said that was 15 years ago. He said, well, he went through the history of technology and where we were now. And he said, I think the next big frontier of science and technology is the brain, understanding the brain. And this is what this new building is about. You're talking about the Chan Institute for Neuroscience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Attacked from from different areas, you know, from engineering, from biology, from chemistry, and also humanities and psychology. And so I think it's driven by the research. The buildings come, okay, now we want to emphasize sustainability. And so let's do this in a big way. And then maybe it's a building, maybe it's a center, maybe it's something else. And this is what drives really Caltech, the research inquiries more than, you know, let's build a building somewhere.
Yeah, of course. Gotcha. I mean, and you talked about the biggest questions of the day that about the world. I mean, can you give me an example? Like, you know, whatever the question, the answer is 14, right? But what are the big questions that still remain in Caltech's sort of inquiry of the world? I probably will understand 10% of that question, but you know, what are some of the big, big questions that Caltech's trying to solve for us?
Well, in the environmental areas, you know, there's big questions about how climate evolves, how it changes, what are the underlying factors, how can we mitigate it, how can we make sure, you know, we don't harm ourselves. So that's a huge area of inquiry. There's in geology and geophysics, understanding how the earth works, and you know, we're very well known for earthquakes and research, and so that's now there's a huge area in understanding the universe, you know, where it started, and you know, physics is huge at Caltech. We had a Nobel Prize not too long ago for gravitational waves. That was theorized by Einstein and then proven by our scientists and Kip Thorne and his teams. So it's never ending. The more question you resolve, the more question it are posed. And there's in biology, there's, you know, huge. Well, the brain, as I said, is a huge mm-hmm. thing. How does it work? How do I understand how it works and try to prevent diseases and how things function as a cellular level, at the chemical level. Anyway, it's never ending. I can't. You know.
Yeah. Sure. Okay. No, it's a good sense. You know, it sounds like it's actually a quite an expansive area that touches, you know, as you said, biology to chemistry to physics. By the way, any involvement with the SpaceX program at all? Just curious.
Not anything formal. Okay. You know, we're really, well, JPL is focused on unmanned missions.
Right.
Robotic, because, you know, going to the moon is one thing, or to go into orbit to the space station, but going to another planet, bring humans there is another whole other ball game. So,
right.
Robotic.
I think Elon Musk wants to send people to Mars also, right?
Yeah. But, you know, robotics offer a much more practical and efficient way of exploring planets.
Sure. Yep. Understood. So no real deep institutional relationship with Elon Musk or SpaceX that.
Not particularly that I know about. The one I can tell you about is my roommate from Caltech became an astronaut.
Oh, wow.
And yeah.
I think my roommate from college is an investment banker, but go ahead.
Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, he flew in space station, and but he ended up at SpaceX. So,
oh wow,
alumni, Caltech alumni, you can imagine, and SpaceX.
That's fantastic! Wow, that's incredible, actually. That's great. So, I mean, I guess as you, I mean, I can't believe you were there for 20 years. You know, you look really young, relatively. It's a compliment. So, you know, looking at the next 20 years, I mean, you know, 20 years from now, like, where do you think Caltech is at that point? You know, what does that look like?
Well, I think Caltech continues to pursue breakthroughs and science and understanding the world and how it works, and at the same time is able to commercialize or bring these new ideas to people's lives and to improve lives and in terms of products and services and new therapies and diagnostic tools and GPS devices to navigate and computing, you name it.
Sure.
But I think what is really, I think on the cusp of really making a big difference at Caltech is this connection to day-to-day life and society, and not just bringing new technologies to people, but also the economic development that comes with that, because usually the best vehicle to bring these technologies is a startup vehicle. And so that brings economic growth, hiring people, and great jobs also, you know, high quality jobs for our alumni and other graduates from the area. We have great universities that produce a lot of engineers and scientists and business people and lawyers, you name it. And all these people are needed to for the success of a startup. And so I think I see Caltech as becoming a key element of the economic engine of the area, alongside the other universities as well.
Yeah.
But particularly in Pasadena and this wonderful community that we're in, that's how I see us going.
Okay. Just a couple of things left. You know, we want to mix it up a little bit here with perhaps some levity. Is it Caltech's position that there's extraterrestrial life out there?
Well, I'm not in a position to talk about Caltech's position.
Yeah, what's your position?
My position is that, in view of the fact that we know now there's many exoplanets and many systems that are similar enough or even different, but that, and so many of them, that the likelihood is, in my opinion, high that there is some kind of life out there. Maybe it's the norm rather than the exception.
That's right. Fred, you do know that the headline of this article will be Fred Farina confirms life outside of Earth. No, that's, you know, compared to obviously what you're exposed to, mine is small relatively, I'm sure. But yeah, my thought on extraterrestrial life has also evolved. I mean, it seems to me that it would make sense that there's something out there beyond just us, but it's interesting to see somebody at Caltech, you know, your perspective. So that's fun.
The funny part is that I was my first job after Caltech. I had two things I were looking at, and one of them was the SETI program, extraterrestrial intelligence. And I almost worked for that program, and then I realized, well, it's going to take a lifetime to even understand, and you know, with that, it was a little bit. Not for me. I admire people who went to this because it takes a lot of courage and persistence and understanding you're going to be here for a long time before something. So I decided to go in a different area. But
right. That's interesting. That's great. And I guess, you know, from like, we don't meet a ton of Caltech people, even in LA, I think maybe by function of the small size that you are, you know, what would you describe like a typical Caltech student, if there is a typical, like what kind of a, you know, person goes and is succeeds, you know, or gets admitted to Caltech and succeeds in Caltech? Do you have like a model of what a Caltechie looks like?
So, first of all, you know, it's been changing, you know, we have really put emphasis on diversity and inclusion and equity. And so, the student body is much more diverse. And in terms of, but they all have the same underlying, you know, extreme smarts, analytical, quantitative skills through the roof. You know, more and more, they're very articulate, very whole, you know, wholesome, I would say, well-rounded. And passionate about science, engineering, and sometimes beyond that, and entrepreneurship as well, more and more. Definitely, you know, you don't have to explain something twice to them. It's very quick. And there's also a certain compassion, humanity, ethics. That's very important, and we have an honor code as students on campus, and that's a very important way of interacting with people, with respect, with to exchange ideas and open debate. And that's really what I think makes them so special.
Wow, you have to be a lot to be a Caltecher. that sounds good. Well, and as an alum, you seem to display a lot of those characteristics too, Fred. So I really appreciate you taking the time with us to tell us more about you and Caltech. I'm incredibly excited about what's to come there. I'm really glad that there is an additional effort to make what you guys study be more applicable in real life, so that it can improve the lives of everybody in the world. So I'm really happy about that. Listen, I hope this is not our last time chatting, and look forward to staying in touch and keeping tabs on all the good stuff. And you're welcome to come back anytime as well to share that progress. So thanks, Fred. Thanks to our listeners for this episode of Silicon Sandbox. See you next time.
Thank you, Steve.